Will a subdued first quarter for deal-making and fundraising herald an equally slow year? Or are we at a turning point? What processes are we keeping an eye on for this year at MergerMarket? And what new deal and exit structures are sponsors turning to in the current market to get deals done? We'll be discussing all this and more in today's episode of the Unquote Private Equity Podcast by MergerMarket. Hello, listener, and welcome to this new episode of the Unquote Private Equity Podcast by MergerMarket. My name's Harriet Matthews. I'm funds editor at MergerMarket, and I'll be your host for today. It's the time of the year where we've been analysing our quarterly private equity data for the first 3 months of the year, making sense of what happened in that first quarter and what this indicates about upcoming activity. MergerMarket's global Q1 2024 M&A highlights showed signs of a recovery in global M&A, but a drop in private equity activity globally in the past quarter. But in today's episode, we'll be delving into the figures for Europe, as well as exploring our fundraising data. In a few moments, I'll be joined by my colleagues Min Ho and Rachel Lewis to get their insights. But I wanted to give you a quick summary of our data before we kick off our conversation. 2024 started off slightly more strongly than 2023 in terms of private equity deal activity, with deal count up by 21% and disclosed deal volume more than doubling versus Q1 2023. Activity has dropped since Q4 2023, however, with deal count down by 6% and disclosed deal volume by 72%. We've said before in MergerMarket analysis pieces and on this podcast that a lot of the prep work that would have gone towards getting processes to market to close this quarter just wasn't happening over the last few months, with many sponsors in wait and see mode. And the comparison with the previous quarter seems to confirm this. We'll talk a bit more about our exits data later, but it's clear that this year has seen quite a slow start in this area too, with 123 deals completed with a disclosed deal volume of 13.2 billion euros. Breaking down deal activity by sector now, computers and electronics and professional services were by far the most active sectors for buyouts in Q1 2024, with 169 and 116 deals respectively. In terms of disclosed deal volume, utility and energy and finance were the strongest, bolstered by deals such as the 4.2 billion euro take private of renewable energy business Encarvis and Cinven's investment in fund administrator Alta Domus, which gave the company a 2.45 billion euro valuation. In spite of the doom and gloom around the macro picture here, the UK was the most active European markets for buyouts in Q1, with 67 deals, surpassing France with 58 and Germany with 43, and continuing a streak as the most active market for deals that it has kept up for three consecutive quarters now. Turning to fundraising now, the number of funds holding closes in Q1 2024 remains subdued, with 34 vehicles versus 37 in Q4 2023. The 76.5 billion euros raised in Q1 2024 puts this quarter below the average 84.4 billion raised per quarter over the last 2 years, so that's in 2022 and 3. And with an average of 50 funds closed per quarter in the same period, this quarter is also lagging when it comes to fundraising. But there are positive signals from the market in terms of LP appetite and an expected exit uptick. So a slow first quarter doesn't necessarily mean we're in for an equally slow rest of the year. Joining me now to discuss this are Min Ho and Rachel Lewis from our private equity reporting team at MergerMarket. Welcome to the podcast, Min and Rachel.
Welcome. Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Now, Min, turning to you first, obviously we're, you know, at the end of Q1, just into Q2 now. What's the macro picture looking like at this stage of the year? And what would you say that means for private equity?
Well, I think to will be worthwhile to set the scene. And if we go back quickly to 2022 to 23, we saw obviously a huge spike in inflation and the subsequent dial-up in interest rates. A lot of PEs were obviously caught off guard and were hesitant to put deals on the market. unless they were of the highest quality. And so come 2023, the market was hearing a lot of noises of no recession, soft landing, and central banks were showing signs of controlling inflation. But some buyers then were still very nervous, perhaps unconvinced by the messaging, and that the risk of a hard landing was still on the horizon, and discount to multiples were perhaps still doable. Sellers, meanwhile, were hesitant to cut valuations and instead resorted to sitting on their hands, pointing out that multiples were not coming down and saw no reason to cut their valuations. So at that point, obviously, only the best assets were getting sold. And that might have warped perception from the market. So turning to 24, it seems like the market has seen a recovery from the bottom. The continuous messaging from the market seems to be filtering through to the advisors and PEs that central banks could begin to unwind the tightening cycle. And we've obviously as well seen several large deals that were done over the past months, which would otherwise have struggled due to lack of financing. And obviously over the last 18 months, we saw a lot of money raised, particularly the mega cap, and now more dry powder available. So it'll be interesting to see where the market moves from now onwards, obviously, because US inflation has just been announced and it's been ticking upwards. So whether that the market can declare victory against inflation might be too soon to say. So it'll be very interesting to see where we go from here.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, I suppose a lot of the things that are most important to private equity are the factors around cost of capital. We've spoken about the kind of syndicated loan market coming back a bit more, which is obviously really important. As you say, with so much dry powder, particularly in the kind of large cap space, I think we saw 11 mega cap funds closing in 2023. In Q1 alone, we've had EQT with their latest buyout fund, and we had Lexington Partners with a 20 billion euro-ish fundraise. That's denominated in dollars originally, but you know, that's a secondaries vehicle, so slightly different, but still, yeah, it'll be very interesting to see where that goes, because I think we're not out of the woods yet, but the signals are a bit more positive. Rachel, turning to you now, obviously you've written about exits recently and been looking at the data there. So this kind of ties into what Min was talking about with kind of unlocking and unfreezing, I think. Can you talk a bit about exits, what the outlook is, how the pipeline is shaping up for this year?
Yeah, it's actually been a really interesting quarter for private equity exits, because when I started to dig down into the data, I saw that private equity firms had actually made 13% fewer exits compared to the same period last year. And as we all know, Q1 23 was already dramatically down on the Q1 prior to that, and it's actually been the worst quarter for exits since the start of the pandemic. This is due to a few varying factors. As my colleague Min just pointed out, we saw a lot of high quality assets that did manage to trade last year. And so managers are kind of still awaiting possibly an expected interest rate changes in the summer before launching processes for their other high quality assets. So we're in a little bit of a bridge period at the moment between mandates that were awarded maybe 12 months ago that haven't launched yet, and the kind of the lag of assets which kind of came up at the end of last year. That's not to say that those currently in auction that have just been sold are from this middling pool. We've seen some really good exits in the recent months. So Apery Capital made 4x return on its sale of TAG to ECI Partners, and Permira made close to 5x on its sale of Universidad Yuripa to EQT's infrastructure funds. But looking forward, the pipeline is good. I just want to share a quote from a recent piece that my colleagues did on the outlook of the Iberian market, which sums it up quite nicely. It's from Inigo de Val, the Madrid-based partner for Allen & Overy. He said that the market is very close to the point where expectations of the buy side and the sell side converge. And it's been a very long time since markets have been at that point, so things are looking better.
Definitely. And as Min said, that was one of the things holding back activity for parts of last year as well. In terms of things kind of picking up, are there any particular processes that people should be watching out for that we're tracking at Merger Market that you wanted to mention?
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of them. I could go on forever, but I think Stada is a big one and will be a big litmus test for the large cap market. Bain and Cinven, its owners, have recently started talking to potential suitors as part of a dual track for the German pharmaceutical company, which is thought to be valued at around 8 billion euros. And Merger Market also reported that Astor Zanacqua, a US software provider focused on IP management, has appointed advisors. As I said, I could go on forever. There's also much more happening in the kind of the mid-cap space, but I think those are two particular deals to keep an eye on.
Yeah, definitely. I think in terms of kind of signaling market sentiment, those are key ones. Now, in terms of deployment, fundraising levels, as I mentioned in the intro, have been fairly low over the last couple of quarters. I don't think that's a surprise to anyone, given the challenging environment we've had around exits. But there's still plenty of pressure from LPs on their GPs to deploy. They want their money put into the ground in this vintage, you know, 2024. For 2023 as well, people were saying, oh, this will be a great vintage. But I think people are quite convinced around 24, if valuations are going to potentially come down, they're looking more likely, obviously, according to the quote you just mentioned, Rachel, and I think to things other sources in the market are telling us as well. So Min, maybe turning to you first, what kind of opportunities and types of deals are sponsors exploring at the moment, or will they be exploring this year, would you say?
Well, I think one area where the market is picking up is deal-by-deal fundraising. And perhaps one of the more prominent examples would be Capvis, which announced last month that it's moving to a deal-by-deal model. After finding difficulties in raising capital for their sixth fund. Triago has been cited in the press. I believe that 31 billion deals were done last year globally. So, and that's five times the amount raised and invested in 2019. Triago also told us separately that they're expecting the market to grow 100% year over year for the foreseeable future. So perhaps this is an attractive route for some GPs and LPs, particularly as some LPs are questioning long lockup periods and high fees in traditional fund models, as well as the difficulty of the exit market, although that seems to be falling a bit. But as we all know, I think deal by deal isn't easy to get done. I've spoken to a small handful of firms which were set up over the past years, and they're still trying to seal their first deal, perhaps again in part due to difficulty in securing financing themselves, especially in a timely manner.
Yeah, and I mean, to be clear, obviously Capvis, I don't think themselves said that they were having issues with their fundraise, but they did say that it wasn't the right time potentially to be going to market with their sixth fund. So it'll be interesting to see how that turns out. We've got plenty of kind of prominent examples of GPs, you know, in the UK market as well. I believe Duke Street is a firm that has been doing deal by deal for some time. And as you said, the economics can be a bit better from an LP perspective in terms of fees. And actually for the GP as well in terms of carry. And they're obviously not committing to a blind pool fund. Typically, I think in deal by deal, the GP has an idea of the precise asset it's going to invest in. So yeah, it will be interesting to see sort of why GPs are choosing that route and if some are choosing it over the typical kind of closed-end fund.
I think this is really interesting actually, because last year when we were looking at deployment trends, I think it was based around what kind of deals people were doing. So we were seeing a lot more primary buyouts. We were seeing a lot more take privates. But what's new this year in the way that deployment is changing is the structure of deals. So Min, you just mentioned deal by deal. One thing I've noticed in looking at the largest deals that have been done is the structure of the equity around them. So we mentioned Alta Domus earlier in the conversation. But that's not been a complete exit for Permira. In fact, it only sold approximately half of its shares to Cinven alongside the company's founders. And Permira has done a similar deal with Universidad Europa, retaining a sizable minority stake. So there's a slight trend towards longer exposure to the companies, whether that be through retaining a large minority stake or a continuation fund. But I think, you know, retaining minority stakes and going into an equity syndicate is a new deal structure. It has been done before, and it's kind of been more the threshold of smaller GPs that are perhaps running thin on resources but want to accelerate further growth. But now appears that larger GPs are taking part in this more too. And it's not just LP co-investments, it's coming together with new investors and bringing kind of larger GPs involved to kind of bridge gaps in valuation and financing. Because we also saw this with Jagex, another large deal when we saw more than one person on the equity because CVC teamed up with gaming tech specialist Haveli to acquire the company. So for those large deals to get done, I think we are going to see more equity syndicates in the coming months.
Yeah, and I know Merger Markets' analysis of the Unilever ice cream deal a couple of weeks ago now obviously said that PEs were likely to be syndicating, you know, teaming up for that, you know, partly because of the size of the business. But actually, it can also be applied to smaller deals. Just in our last episode, Elena Lalo from secondaries investor Klein Hill Partners was saying that sometimes they see someone coming in with a minority stake prior to a GP-led secondary, a continuation fund transfer. And that is, you know, a different situation from Jagex, but almost comparable because occasionally it is to bring in sector expertise. So, you know, making the asset and the investment a kind of more appealing prospect potentially for LPs overall.
But I think what this does really signal is that we are going back to exits. People are thinking about, okay, if I put my large cap asset on the market, who can I sell it to? So it's more, I would see it as kind of an exit strategy than a deployment strategy. You have to think about, if I've got a multi-billion company for sale, perhaps I'm going to have two or three buyers rather than just one.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I know that you know, a few months ago we spoke to Advent International and they spoke about exit optionality being a big thing for them. And I think the fact that people haven't been able to make as many exits as they wanted last year has definitely brought home the fact that that needs to be on their mind. So yeah, that's a good point. I like the idea of going back to exits. That'll be the thing a lot of people are hoping for this year. And I think we'll end this week's episode there on that positive note. And we'll be sure to keep you informed of how things are shaping up in 2024 and beyond, of course, here at Merger Market. So thank you, Min and Rachel, for joining me today. It's been really great to hear your insights. And thank you, listener, for tuning in. If you like the podcast, then please don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And we'll see you again in another episode.